More about Jesus. Let's turn to Hebrews chapter 10 and I'll read verses 23 through 31. Hebrews 10, chapter 10, verses 23 through 31. Let us hold fast the confession of our hope without wavering, for he who promised is faithful. And let us consider one another in order to stir up love and good works, not forsaking the assembling of ourselves together as he is in the manner of some, but exhorting one another, and so much the more as you see the day approaching. For if we sin willfully after we have received the knowledge of the truth, there no longer remains a sacrifice for sin, but a certain fearful expectation of judgment and fiery indignation which will devour the adversaries. Anyone who has rejected Moses' law dies without mercy on the testimony of two or three witnesses. Of how much worse punishment do you suppose will be thought worthy who has trampled the Son of God underfoot, counted the blood of the covenant by which he was sanctified a common thing, and insulted the Spirit of grace? For we know him who said, "Vengeance is mine, I will repay, says the Lord." And again, "The Lord will judge his people." It is a fearful thing to fall into the hands of the living God.
I think we got it on. Okay. Thank you, Dennis. Well, I don't know whether Larry, when he looked at me this morning, was prophesying or what, but he didn't look very good, and so I kind of halfway expected that whenever he got done this morning. But as I was sitting there listening to him, as he started out in Hebrews, the 10th chapter this morning, I kind of keep some lessons on hand ready to go for sometimes emergencies like this, and I was sitting there thinking, you know, this kind of dovetails with one I got here already, so It worked out well. I think the Lord is in control. But I want to speak to it in two parts. I want to discuss here in this the 23rd, the 24th, and the 25th verse. And then I'm going to go to the last ones in this kind of a two-part lesson here. And as we said, it's about perseverance, about hanging in there and doing what we need to do, knowing with certainty what is right and that what we're doing is right. The writer of Hebrews here says, verse 24, he said, hold fast our confession of our hope without wavering, for he who promised is faithful. Hebrews, this is a theme throughout Hebrews. In Hebrews 3:1, therefore, holy brothers and sisters who share in the heavenly calling, fix your thoughts on Jesus, whom we acknowledge as our apostle and high priest. Hebrews 3:6. But Christ is faithful as the Son over God's house, and we are his house, if indeed we hold firmly to our confidence and the hope in which we glory. With this call to persevere, there was given instructions to the early church on just exactly how they could hang in there during some tough times. Now we think, and most of the writers, if you go and take a look at those who have studied Hebrews, they don't know for sure who authored Hebrews. I'm one of those that incline myself to Paul, but there's some good reasons why it couldn't be Paul, and there's really nothing to get all worried about is the fact that God inspired someone, whoever it was, to write this letter, and he is writing to Jews in the Jerusalem area. And not shortly, too far after these writings right here, is when the destruction of Jerusalem comes about. And we see that they all fled, but the ones that were left, they suffered during this time, just like all the other Jews who were there. But a good portion of the church had gotten out of Jerusalem, but they weren't out of that area. And that whole area suffered when the Romans came in and basically leveled Jerusalem. But they had the deal there, stimulate one another to love and good deeds. Not the only place that this is recognized. Colossians 3:16. Let the message of Christ dwell among you richly as you teach and admonish. Almost the same word as encourage there. Admonish one another with all wisdom through psalms, hymns, and songs from the Spirit, singing to God with gratitude in your hearts. 1 Thessalonians 5, verse 11. Therefore, encourage one another and build each other up, just as in fact you are doing. There's Paul writing to the church at Thessalonica. That was at 1 Thessalonians 5 and 11. In 2 Corinthians 13 and 11, it's kind of at the closing of that 13th chapter. Paul says, finally, brothers and sisters, rejoice, strive for the full restoration, and encourage one another, be of one mind, live in peace, and the God of love and peace will be with you. Encourage one another. You see the theme there of these scriptures right here, and the writer of Hebrews echoes that theme, encourage. Well, how do we do that? Not too long ago, I am talking with a man from the town of Clearwater where I live, and I know that in past discussions with him that he considers himself a religious person. But he doesn't believe you need the church. I can find God wherever I'm at. Folks, I have a question, and I've asked him this question, and I didn't get a good answer. I don't think I changed his mind either. But I said, how do you stimulate one another if you're the only one? Just the very tone of these scriptures and the very way that you take a look at the words means that this is a group of people. And they're meeting face to face, and they're looking at each other, and they're encouraging each other. They're giving each other support in the tough times. And we see all through that area where Christians face tough times through persecution by Roman emperors and by Jewish people who were there who opposed the church. And it stayed strong because they were a group that hung together. Now, if you go back to Acts and you take a look at the beginnings of the church, it says they met every day. They shared with one another. In other words, they were in contact with each other a lot. 1 Thessalonians 4:18. Therefore, encourage one another with these words. Short one. Still in 1 Thessalonians 5:11. Therefore, encourage one another and build each other up, just as in fact you are doing. To me, it's pretty plain right there. I like that one right there. Encourage one another and build each other up. You know, as we take a look, we know the church is made up of all kinds of people. And if you get a group, and you've got a group of people who are, the whole group is strong-willed, and they're confident, and they feel they know, how well does that group get along? I mean, be honest. Does that group get along very well if they're all exactly the same? It hasn't been my indication. As a teacher for many years, you'd get together with other teachers and they who would think that you ought to be teaching one way, and I thought I ought to be teaching and the other way, and we've both been teachers for a long period of time. We never did come to an agreement about who was right, but we both thought we were right. But then you take those two strong teachers and you put them together with a bunch of ones that are brand new ones. That's the reason I say this. I got involved in training some new teachers coming into the profession. Guess what? They got good ideas from this person. They also got good ideas from me. And we hope that over the time that it made them a better teacher. Folks, the church is the same way. We have got weak Christians. We have got strong Christians. We have Christians with definite opinions on some things. We got other Christians that have no opinion at all on some things. It takes that whole mix together. You put it all together. You talk to one another. You study the Bible. You pull the scriptures out. And you use these right here. Some of the best learning experiences I've had has been when we're studying with somebody else and they pull out something and they say, well, the way I read this, I think this. And after a while, I'll have to sit there and look at it and I'll go, you know, I never thought of it that way. And there's been several times, I'm willing to admit, I've had lots of things wrong over the years. Because sometimes we get a little stubborn, especially if we're confident, quote, that's in quotes, if we're confident in what we know. Encourage one another, build each other up, just as in fact you are doing. Hebrews the third chapter, verse 13. Hebrews the third chapter, verse 13. But encourage one another daily, as long as it is called today, so that none of you may be hardened by sin's deceitfulness. That means don't put it off. If you're going to say something, you're going to talk to a brother, you're going to ask, you know, do it. Make up your mind. Do it. Well, that leads us to verse 25. And depending on what version you have, I have verses in my New American Standard, which I like. I've been reading from the New International Version. But in the New American Standard, verses 23 to 25 are all one long sentence. So that means he's talking about assembling. He says, not forsaking our own assembling together as in the habit of some, but encouraging one another, and all the more as you see the day drawing near. We're back in Hebrews, the 10th chapter there, and that is verse 25. See how all of these verses echo the same thing, encourage one another. Now, he's saying here some, but he's also given one specific encouragement here. Do not forsake the assembly. What do we mean by that, folks? We mean a public worship service. We're here this evening doing that very thing right now. We had 131 of us here this morning doing that very thing. It would be nice if we had the same 131 here this evening. But what is happening there, some out of fear, out of whatever, they were saying, we better not show up. Later on, we see in examples, as we get later on, where there was a couple of times that you can read about where Roman, the Emperor Trajan and Domitian were two Roman emperors that for some reason particularly disliked Christians. And when they found out where they were meeting, and they would surround that meeting place, and there's recorded history where they just burnt the whole building with the Christians inside. Well, you can see how that might have an effect on people wanting to get together. But the writer here says, do not forsake the assembly. Why? Because you need to be there to build each other up. And Sometimes, you know, you get in a discussion there, well, I'm going to get past this. If we get out of the habit, what's the problem there? We develop another habit. And that's a bad one. Bad habits, are they easier to break than good ones? No, they're not. Bad habits. If pretty soon, if we go on Sunday morning, Sunday evening, and Wednesday evening, and pretty soon we cut back on the Wednesday because things are just getting real busy, things are just getting real hectic. And over the years, I've seen it time and time again. It's not too long before, okay, I'm going to cut back on Sunday evening. And then we become just someone who meets on Sunday morning. And after a while, that gets to be more infrequent. And then pretty soon, it's just, well, I went to church a couple of times this month. And it's starting to slide in there. That's the bad habit you break. Sometimes, folks, it takes years of developing a good habit. Especially getting up and saying, okay, I'm going to get up and go to church today. I'm going to go to church Sunday evening. I'm going to go to church Wednesday evening. And if possible, I'm going to meet. Think back to that first century church that met every day. Folks, that's one of the things I appreciate about the church here at Derby. Is, I got to be honest, I could be meeting with Christians every day of the week. There's always something going on. Which is good. Now, not all of us take advantage of all of the things that are going on. But more of us need to be taking advantage here of what is going on and putting ourselves with other Christians. You know, this idea of meeting, I'm going to go back to our discussion that I had with this gentleman that he was saying that, you know, he really didn't need the church. And Sunday was just one of those days that, you know, that's some denomination. Well, I'll just use it. He said that's what the Catholics installed, and he said that doesn't mean anything. Well, I took some series of scriptures to him, and I want to go here now to show him that what I believe is scriptural evidence that the first day of the week is exactly when we're supposed to do this, and we're supposed to do it all together as a group. Go first to John, the 20th chapter. Verses 19 through 28. I'm not going to read all of these entirely, but I'm going to read a few of them. John, the 20th chapter, verses 19 through 28. Starting in the 19th verse. On the evening of that first day of the week, when the disciples were together with the doors locked for fear of the Jewish leaders, Jesus came and stood among them and said, "Peace be with you." And after he said this, he showed them his hands and his side, and the disciples were overjoyed when they saw the Lord. Again, Jesus said, "Peace be with you. As the Father has sent me, I am sending you." And with that, he breathed on them and said, "Receive the Holy Spirit." Well, we see that there was one apostle missing during this time. It was Thomas. The other apostles told him, they said, "Hey, Jesus, we've seen Jesus." And you know the story. Thomas said, "I will not believe that unless I can touch his hands and put my hand in his side." But notice verse 26. A week later. What day is this? A week later. Some versions say the eighth day, which would be the first day of the week. We're in the house again, and Thomas was with them. Though the doors were locked, Jesus came and stood among them and said, "Peace be with you." Then he said to Thomas, "Put your finger here, see my hands, reach out your hand, put it in my side. Stop doubting and believe." And Thomas did. I bring that out because I think that shows that Jesus, before he ascended, he met with his apostles. I think it was on the first day of the week. When did he raised from the dead. First day of the week. So can we wonder where the church got a strong foundation for meeting on the first day of the week? I think it began right there. In 1 Corinthians 16 and verse 2. 1 Corinthians 16 and verse 2. On the first day of every week, each of you should set aside a sum of money in keeping with your income, saving it up so that when I come, no collections have to be made. Now, it's not to talk specifically about worship there, but we know from practice, what are they doing there? When they refer to the first day of the week, he's just saying, here's another thing. When you meet, I want you to do this. They were already meeting. He's just adding something here that needed to be done. Acts 20 and verse 7. Acts 20 and verse 7. On the first day of the week, we came together to break bread. Paul spoke to the people, and because he intended to leave the next day, he kept on talking till midnight. Now, I've heard many preachers say that's a basis for 6-hour or 7-hour sermons. Right there. I've never sat through one yet, but I've heard them say that. But notice when they're meeting on the first day of the week. James 2, verses 2 and through 4. James 2, verses 2 through 4. Suppose a man comes into your meeting wearing a gold ring and fine clothes, and a poor man in filthy old clothes also comes in. If you show special attention to the man wearing the fine clothes and say, here's a good seat for you, but say to the poor man, you stand there or sit on the floor by my feet, have you not discriminated among yourselves and become judges with evil thoughts? Now first you say, what's that got to do, folks? If a stranger is going to walk in and go to church, he would have to know what? To know he was getting at the right place, at the right time. They would have to be having regular meetings. And somebody would have to know where they're at and would have to know what time they start. And they're so well organized here, they have ushers. Now, does that not show you a pattern? And they're meeting on the first day of the week. Now, I think there's several more, but these are just some I picked out that you may have not known about. So I've shown this to that man that I've talked to, and he left with thinking about it, but I don't think I changed his mind. But how can we encourage each other if we're not here? And it is the first day of the week. Regardless of some of the ways, we've got a lot of churches trying to change it, trying to go back to some Old Testament practices where they change it and put it back in. Folks, when the first century church was meeting, we had the Jewish way of keeping a day, and when the day started in the evening of the night before. And that's where a lot of people are basing it, folks. But who was running that part of the world during Jesus' time and afterwards? It was the Romans. And the Romans started the day like we do, at midnight. At midnight. That was the beginning of the next day, not the evening. The other way was the way the Jews kept it. But Roman time was figured like that. And I believe that's the way most of those churches met, especially those ones that were Gentiles, as they were called. And the reason I say that is because there is a man called Pliny. If I don't get too far past my notes here. There's a man called Pliny who was he wrote it about 125. And he was writing to the Emperor Trajan. And I think I left a sheet of my notes at home. And here we go. He was writing to the Emperor Trajan. And around 112 AD, and here is what he wrote about Christians. Now, Pliny was what we call one of the early church fathers. This is after the apostles. A lot of them had died. But now Pliny was around. He would have probably known John the Baptist. I mean, the Apostle John. Excuse me, I misspoke there. He would have known the Apostle John, probably. Okay, so he would have been around to have seen that last apostle and maybe even sat at his feet and learned from him. But here's what he says to the Emperor Trajan. He's talking about Christians. And he says, on an appointed day, they have been accustomed to meet before daybreak. He went on to relate that their services were nothing of scandalous or improper kind. They partook of a meal of the most harmless and ordinary variety. Then they sang hymns to Christ as God, and they bound themselves with the promise not to commit fornication or theft or any other crime. That's what Pliny is telling the emperor here. Now, folks, back then, they didn't have Sunday. Every day was a day of work. They were expected to be at work. And the early church got together before sunup, met together, encouraged one another, sang songs, took the Lord's Supper, and then they went off and did what they had to do that day. And they came back and did it every time at the appointed time. I think there's plenty of evidence to show that the foundation we get for meeting as a church like this, it's scriptural. What are we supposed to do when we meet? Encourage one another. Why? Because all of us need it, and we need it very badly. Now I want to finish up with verses 26 through 31. Here comes a promise and a warning. If you know the truth and you elect not to do it, what condition are you in? You're in trouble. Do not go back, he says. If you know the truth and don't do it, do not go back. Under the Mosaic law, if somebody broke the Mosaic law and he had two or three witnesses, he could be put to death for breaking the law. And several times the New Testament writer said, if they don't accept the word of Christ, the fact that Christ died on the cross, you make his sacrifice to no avail. You have crucified Christ again. He's saying, don't do that. Don't turn your back. Stay strong. Do what you know you're supposed to do. That is, meet, encourage one another, and do the very best you can with that. You know, we're fortunate. We have the Bible bound up here. You know, probably many of these people during this time right here didn't see it like this. Maybe some of them never got to see it. All they heard was it spoken, but we have it here in so much better way to do it. He ends, and I'm going to end with a warning. For if we know him who said, vengeance is mine, I will repay, and again the Lord will judge his people, it is a terrifying thing to fall into the hands of a living God. That term there, living God, you know, most people, you know, we've seen the deals. Oh, God is dead. God created the world and he's gone. But I want to think for a moment. A living God, what's that? That's somebody that means this whole thing means something to them. And the promises in there mean something to them, and also the consequences mean something. And it should terrify us if we don't want to fall into the hands of a God who knows and understands, who is actually living. There's no such thing as mere church attendance. But wholehearted, sincere, devout, and faithful public worship the Almighty God through Christ That's what we find in Scripture, and that's what we find missing today in so many people who profess to be Christians and churches who profess to be churches. When people do not attend worship, they do not give, nor do they pray, nor sing God's praise, nor observe the Lord's Supper, nor study the Bible. Now, these can be done independently, but we're supposed to do them all together. And you have to study individually. Yes, I think you do. But that's different than the public worship. If we don't do that and encourage one another, pretty soon everybody's just off going there's one thing, and we wind up like Elijah. Elijah's up there. He's just defeated 400 prophets of Baal. One woman says, I'm going to have his head. I'm going to kill him. Elijah gets scared, and he's up on a mountain somewhere. And what's he's crying? He's crying, Lord, I'm the only one. The Lord goes, no. There are 7,000 who haven't bowed a knee to Baal. And he's talking about the northern tribes of Israel, the ones who had long since forsaken the true worship of God. He says, there are 7,000. Now get up, get busy, and go do what I tell you to do. And what's he tell us to do? He tells us to meet with one another, encourage one another, because the day is approaching. We don't know when it is. I hope that hadn't been a downer this evening, but it is, yes. We should be attending all of our services and as many of the activities as we possibly can and put them into our lives. Get other people to come see what's going on here at the church at Derby. There are a lot of people looking for things, and they really don't know what it is, but the Lord has it. Our lesson this evening: if you want to become a member of that body, you need to be baptized. Everything is ready for that. If you've not been baptized, then you need to come forward and do it. If there's something that the church can help you with, you need to speak to the elders or something. We need you to come forward and make your wishes known now as we stand and sing our invitation song.